We have for the next item Hillary. And I told you this about 2 months ago. Suddenly, I told you that Hillary was going to throw other people under the bus to try and save her own skin. And that the administration, Loretta Lynch and Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama, even though they don't like Hillary, they love their ideology. She's the most likely to carry it on for her own nefarious purposes, not for theirs. But, you know, the end justifies the mean. That they would cooperate with Hillary in throwing the State Department, Hillary's staff and confidants, Uma Abedin, Cheryl Mills, etc., all her top people under the bus to save Hillary's skin, still allow some indictments to kind of satisfy the lust of the American people, and keep her presidential run intact. Lo and behold, this week, Hillary Clinton started throwing the State Department under the bus, basically saying, and I believe the article's posted under Hillary down below, I hope, the producers got it done, basically saying that the State Department, it was all their fault. They shouldn't have allowed her to do this. They should have known she was doing this. They did know she was doing this. She thought because they knew she was okay. Blah, 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 blah. And as you know, the guy who set up her private server has now been granted immunity. And as you may know, Uma Abedin and Cheryl Mills are suddenly under intense investigation by the FBI. Mark my words on how this plays out, folks. Mark my words. All right, economic megatrends. Man, we're 44 minutes already. I can't even believe it. Economic megatrends. You know, we have talked about the war cycle. I mean, these are various theories of various economists. We have talked about the war cycles. We have talked about the Kondratiev wave, which is an economic 50-year cycle. We have talked about the oil and energy cycle. We've talked about all these big cycles. One of the cycles that we've not talked about is the demographic cycle, which, by the way, happens to, whether you believe these other cycles or not, coincides in timing with the peaking of many of these other cycles. So there's a gentleman by name of Harry Dent. I've talked about him before. And he is a big believer in demographics. So 30 years ago, he predicted, 30 years ago, that the United States would see a major generational spending peak in 2007, which, as we all know, was the year before the big mess we had in 2008, and that these demographic trends were on 46-year cycles for the typical demographic, and on 54-year cycles for the top 20% economically speaking of a demographic trend. In other words, the richest people in a demographic wave peak later than the poorer people because they spend more for longer, they've gone to school longer, they have children later, etc. This is his theory. Okay? His theory goes on to say that when you hit the demographic cliff, that is, this demographic wave matures, that 70% of the economy, that's right, folks, 70% of our economy depends on consumer spending, how far we have fallen from the manufacturing giant we were. 70% is consumer spending. That when these demographic peaks are hit, that spending will go down and adversely, and materially adversely, affect the economy. So, if you look at the stats here, I want to get you the exact stuff, so excuse the delay. The peak number of baby boomers were in 2007. That was the peak of the baby boomers. Now, the more affluent part of the baby boom demographic wave, that top 10 to 20%, peaked in 2015. Now, what did we see? 2008, big downturn. 2016, the beginnings of a big downturn. So, the top 10 to 20%, because they have the highest income, they have the highest wealth, they spend for a longer period, okay? The greatest differential between them and the rest of the demographic wave was in 1928 and 1929. In other words, income inequality, whether you believe in it or not, it does create social unrest, it does imbalance economies. The last peak in income inequality coincided with the last big demographic wave, which was 1928 and 1929. That top 10 to 20% of a demographic wave, by the way, they account for 50%, listen to that, 50% of all consumer spending. 50%. That's huge. Now, to get a little bit further, I did a little research on this, to get a little bit further into his theory. I found that global luxury brands that, of course, the more affluent part of this demographic wave would be buying, have been tanking since mid-2015. In fact, such brands as, let's see, I got them written down here, Nordstrom, Ralph Lauren, Sotheby's, Tiffany & Company, Williams-Sonoma, Louis Vuitton, and others, I mean, those are just representative samples, are all down, and overall affluent brands, name brands, you know, top of the line stuff, is down 26% since mid-2015. 26%. If you look at the individual, some of the individual names, I'll just take these. There's also Nike, Estee Lauder, Mercedes, Moët Hennessy, BMW, Carnival Cruises, VF Corporation. I mean, it's all the same across the board. There's like no bright spots in it. Nordstrom is down 36% since March of 2015. Ralph Lauren is down 46% since January. Sotheby's is off 48% since June. Tiffany & Company is down 32% since August. Williams-Sonoma is off 44% since August. Louis Vuitton is off 24% since October. Now, you know, once again, you take these economic dots. I'm no economist. I take this theory. I look at the other theories. I look at what's really happening, boots on the ground. I just gave you these stats, and there might be something to it. Might be something to it. And do you know where a lot of their money is going, the affluent, who are now reaching retirement age? Into hard assets. Small and large pieces of land located in the types of areas I've talked about. I'm sure some of it's going into gold and silver. It's going into hard stuff, folks. Because they understand that preserving wealth is the key today. All right. You know, it's also going into hard assets because this is the group, and they know it, that has most at risk in any kind of calamitous downturn or downturn. I mean, they're the group that's benefited the most by these low interest rates. They got the most stocks. They got the most bonds. I mean, that's just the way it is. Therefore, they can get hurt the most. Therefore, the transfer of money into hard assets from this group far surpasses, even on a pro rata basis, any other group. And I might add, many of these groups have real financial advisors, not the hayseed like me, who is not a financial advisor at all. And so somebody's telling him something, huh? By the way, along these lines, a new stat came out. And by the way, go to Shadow Government Statistics. Remember, I've told you about this website, Shadow Stats. ShadowGovernmentStatistics.com to get the real skinny on inflation, unemployment, etc. So the new job numbers came out. The books were cooked again this week. I mean, it's like, you know, you can't rely on anything the government tells you. If you go to the Labor Department, the unemployment rate is roughly double the 4.9% that the government is spewing. If you go to shadowgovernmentstatistics.com, you'll find that while it is now the best, the real unemployment rate is now the best since 2012. It's still at a whopping 22% unemployment. Yep. And some new stats came out on unemployment, which, by the way, is key, right? That drives consumer spending and all this other stuff we've been talking about. So if the U.S. economy has generated 4.87 million additional non-farm payroll jobs since the last time we were at 5% unemployment, that is before the downturn, and this is going on the government's numbers, folks, 2.6 million of those jobs, 53%, were part-time jobs. Remember the government changed that statistic? Yes. Or changed the incorporation of that statistic into their reports, put in quotes. Their reporting lies would be more like it. Those payroll slots, those 2.6 million, 53% part-time new jobs, a lot of that attributable, by the way, to Obamacare, amounts to a 40% of a normal job. They did the math on it. Those 2.6 million jobs, which are now counted in the unemployment figures by our lovely government, only represent on average 40% of a typical job, most of them generated less than 25 hours per week and pay rates of less than $14 per hour. That's an annualized pay rate, by the way, of $20,000 a year compared to $50,000 a year for full-time jobs. So, it's my job to bring you the truth behind the nonsense. Hopefully, I'm getting that done today for you. By the way, another stat along these lines, think about this declining income, the demographic boom, all this kind of stuff we've talked about just today. In December 31, 2007, households had historically high debt of $14.1 trillion, folks. I've done a show on this. You can go back into the archives and listen to it on debt. Just type in debt, unfunded liabilities, consumer debt, corporate debt. You should be able to get all those shows. $14.1 trillion, home mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, consumer loans, all that stuff. And then came the bust, and a lot of people lost their houses, which means the debt went away, or they paid down their debt, or they cut up their credit, or whatever they did. And the debt kind of dipped quite a bit. However, because income has lagged, jobs have lagged, and more than half of the jobs are now part-time, which represent 40% of a real job, debt is back up. In fact, it matches the $14.1 trillion record set in 2007 for households and consumers. Another kind of interesting dot to add to your economic dot board, if you will. In that omnibus budget bill, you're going to love this. So defense spending, $582.7 billion, which is up from $547 billion last year. And as we know, and Trump is right on this, there's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. I just gave you some of it today on this show. What's really interesting is that this budget directs most of those funds toward kind of rearming NATO-related things, Europe-related things, anti-China military things, anti-Russia military things. And it actually decreases, listen to this, spending and resources allocated to Middle East ISIS terror and anti-radical jihad. very interesting. I thought Obama was in that debate with Romney, and I'm going to get to Romney here in a moment. I thought he was on that debate stage with Romney, and he said that Romney lived in the past, talking about Russia as our greatest geopolitical threat. Well, I guess you could say that maybe he's thought about it and he thinks Romney's now right, or maybe you could say that he just wants to spend less money fighting his buddies over there in the Mideast. Or maybe it's a combo. Who knows? One thing we do know, whatever that decision was, whatever the impetus was for this radical shift in budgetary focus at the Department of Defense, was not driven by his deep concern for the best interests of America or you and I. And you know what? This is amazing. I actually have time, just a few minutes, to read you some more of this American Thinker article, which, by the way, was published January 14, 2016. It is entitled "The Left's Endgame Hits the Wall in American Thinker" by Dan Gorski. Great article. I've read you some in the back, in the past, and I'll just read you one sentence of that. "The slow motion suicide that America has been committing since the mid-1960s is no longer in slow motion." That kind of sums up what I've read to you in the past. Let me read you some more. "This is not Sweden, and the American left are not benign social democrats. These are the violent heirs of Lenin and Stalin, and they are out for blood, ours. Their objective is the destruction of the middle class," which, gee, what were we talking about today in this economic stuff, "and the imposition of top-down tyranny. It has always been. They will enlist Islamic terrorism, race war, class envy, and any other deadly tool to achieve the destruction of hated America. These nihilists care nothing about their people or their civilization, only their warped worldview. You needn't look no further than at our president's mentors, the misbegotten, hate-filled spawn of the 1960s anti-war movement, who now run your government and your life. Code words such as populist, southern, redneck, nativist, and racist all mean white, middle America and their culture. The tough-minded Scots-Irish traditions of honesty, hard work, honor, patriotism, and military ferocity. This is the left's nemesis, what they hate and fear the most. These characteristics that for 150 years have powered the ascendancy of America are being dangerously corroded by a toxic mix of white guilt, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, welfare, and an education system that actively suppresses knowledge, especially historical knowledge." I will read you some more from this great article in future shows. But you know, those two paragraphs, or those three that I just read you, they do kind of tie into what we've been talking about all these many months, and even today's show, don't they? Something to think about. Be prepared. Be safe. We'll talk to you next week. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great Saturday. Whoops. Hold on. My producer is gesturing frantically at me. Yes, you are correct, Ms. Producer. All right. We're at very limited time, so I'm going to speak very quickly. I did not get a chance to talk about Romney and the Republican establishment. I did not get a chance to talk about oil prices and Saudi Arabia. There will be, again, this is getting to be a nice habit, an adjunct on the website, www.ontherightsideradio.com, for you AM listeners. I will keep it brief, but I will cover those two points. We'll see you there. Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side. Now I am signing off.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.